Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, online fitness coach, nutritionist, and 3 times best-selling author, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness, and mindset. We are in for a treat in today's podcast. Today's guest is with the GOAT, the greatest of all time from the CrossFit Games, 5 times champion, Matt Frazier. This was definitely one of my favorite interviews that I've ever had the pleasure of doing in this podcast. Matt is so inspiring, so motivational, gives out such incredible content online and in this podcast. It is nearly impossible to listen and not get either incredible tools that can develop and make your mindset stronger or feel motivated and inspired off the back of this. We jumped straight into the podcast today, so there's no dilly-dallying just because we were a little bit short on time. Thankfully, we actually got to run over and do a full interview, but I will talk you through what I would have normally done in the interview description. So this introduction will be a little bit longer, and then once we jump into today's podcast, we literally go straight into the first question. So no dilly-dallying, no messing around, straight in for today. So today's guest, Matt Frazier. Matt is, in most people's eyes, mine definitely, the fittest man on earth, the most successful and dominant CrossFit athlete in history, a 5-time CrossFit Games champion, 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019, and 2020, and the only 6-time individual podium finisher prior to his CrossFit career. Matt was also the 2009 junior national champion weightlifter and the son of Olympic athletes. We also talk in today's episode about failure and how his dream was crushed when it came to making the Olympics, and how that was actually the most beneficial thing, or one of the most beneficial things that happened to him in his life, because it set him up on his path for CrossFit and all the opportunities that came off the back of that. Matt's journey to success is characterized by adversity, including fighting his way back to fitness after breaking his back in a training accident when he was 19. Matt now shares his fitness secrets and insights across social media to a following of 2.4 million avid fans and Instagram followers. He is also the author of the book and national bestseller, Hard Work Pays Off, HWPO, Train, Eat, Sleep, Repeat, which we discuss in today's podcast. For those of you unfamiliar with CrossFit, just again, most of you will be. For those of you unfamiliar with it though, CrossFit is one of the world's largest participation fitness programs. There are currently over 15,000 affiliated CrossFit gyms globally. 400,000 people compete in the CrossFit Open, the biggest sporting participatory event in the world. So just a little bit of a background on CrossFit. Today's podcast, we jump around on a lot of different topics, from using resentment, using fuel, using quote unquote bad motivators to get you through difficult times, changing your relationship with failure, how to suffer, and the reason and the benefit that there is to suffering and living your life as a champion by looking back on the things that you've done because you were able to grind out the difficult moments that you're going through. Matt talks about CrossFit. He talks about heartbreak from relationships. He gives lots of different examples in today's podcast. As I said, one of my favorite ever interviews that I've had the pleasure of doing. So hopefully you enjoy today's podcast and get as much out of it as I did. So without further ado, here is today's podcast with 5-time fittest man on earth, Matt Frazier, on using the fuck you mentality, why suffering makes you stronger, and how hard work pays off. Enjoy. Matt, I want to jump straight in today. Like, I love your new book. There's just so many golden nuggets here, and I want to unpack a little bit of it for people. For those who are unfamiliar, the new book, Hard Work Pays Off, go and pick it up on audio. I have the physical version in front of me here. It's all marked up from the journal entries and all the amazing stuff that's in there. But I want to start and talk about the strength mentality. That's something you spoke about in the book, and you spoke about how you didn't do CrossFit because you thought you'd become a 5-time champion or, you know, incredibly successful, the GOAT when it comes to the CrossFit Games. Talk to us about why you started it.
So, you know, anyone that doesn't know, I had a background in Olympic weightlifting, and, you know, started Olympic weightlifting when I was about 12 years old. And then that was my only priority. So all through high school, college, that was my goal, was to make the Olympics. After high school, lived and trained at the Olympic Training Center for 2 years, and then went to the Olympic Education Center. You know, when I retired from weightlifting, I went from training twice a day every day and being very health conscious. My diet was oriented around training, everything. And then, you know, I just didn't have a purpose. So it was, I remember like walking by a tray of cookies one time and being like, oh man, I wish I could have a cookie. And then I was like, oh wait, I can. And then it's just a slippery slope. And, you know, I went from training twice a day to just being in school full time. And so I guess you could say I gained my freshman 15, you know, I obviously wasn't a freshman. I was a little bit older, but, and it came down to, okay, I either need to clean up my diet or start working out again. And I was like, I don't want to clean up my diet. I really enjoy this food. And, you know, finding an Olympic weightlifting gym, they're few and far between. But every weightlifter knows that if you're out of town or in a new area, you can just go into any CrossFit gym and they use all the same equipment, the same bumper plates and bars. And so that's what I did. I went into a local affiliate near my house and just, and I went in and just said like, hey, I have no interest in doing CrossFit. I just want to do weightlifting. And they're like, yeah, sure. Like you can go in the back room or off to the side, just like stay out of the way of the class, but you're more than welcome to do whatever you want. And so I did. And one of the girls at the gym who was a competitor started kind of coercing me into little CrossFit pieces here and there. You know, it started out with something, I think it was Grace, where she was like, hey, it's 30 clean and jerks for time. It's not CrossFit. It's just Olympic weightlifting. And so I did it. And, you know, and it was her boyfriend at the time, now husband, owned the gym. And they, you know, I think they saw some potential in me. And Jade, the owner of Champlain Valley CrossFit, was hosting a competition in-house and he wanted me to try my hand in it. And so he signed me up for the competition. And the deal was, if you win any prize money, you have to buy a pair of CrossFit shoes. And so I ended up winning the event. And I went, oh my God, this is like, I think it was $500. And I was like, this is awesome. And so I looked at it as like my part-time job through college. And, you know, and then I realized that now looking back that there was a huge sense of daily gratification, you know, having those daily achievements, you know, going into the gym and saying like, all right, I want to work on my handstand pushups. And then there's that daily dose of gratification of, oh, I worked towards a goal. I did something today that's going to set me up for success tomorrow. And so I think that was the real hook. And, you know, it's just problem solving. Everything I did was just basically putting my engineering degree to use when it came to fitness of, all right, you know, I want to get better at handstand pushups. Well, all right, well, what's the bottleneck here? What do I need to work on? And, you know, and breaking each movement apart into 10 little things, you know, for handstand pushups, is it my shoulder strength, tricep strength? Is it my endurance? Is it technique? And breaking every single movement apart into these tiny, tiny little pieces, and then working on each of those individually, and then bringing them all together and retesting. So, you know, as the years went by, it just became more and more drastic of breaking every single piece down into just these little, tiny, daily achievable goals. And, you know, looking at the game plan of, all right, this is where I am today. Where do I want to be next week, next month, next year, in 5 years from now? And putting a game plan together so I can put it into a daily obtainable checklist to get myself to where I want to be.
I love that. It's the incredible focus and looking in from the outside. Although now having read your book, and something I'm going to go back on several times, particularly the journal entries, which are my favorite part, I feel like from the outside, I looked at you as somebody who was just this machine, and by all extents and purposes, you are. But the mindset and the thing that fuels it is just incredible. And on the inside of the cover of the book, and I've done a deep dive into it, but there's a quote, and it kind of segues nicely with problem solving, talking about every day I consciously seek to what I'm bad at and look to pound out any weaknesses until it's a strength. When you think of biggest weaknesses turned to strength, what comes to mind?
I would say, you know, the first one that kind of was the, you know, the snowball rolling down the hill was, you know, probably my rowing. It came up in a competition. I was terrible at it. And so, you know, very, very early on, I was like, okay, how do I get better at rowing? I row, like I'm going to do it all the time. And I remember I would row probably 5,000 meters a day, every other day in different intervals. you know, kind of just geographical luck. Concept 2 is based out of Vermont. And so a lot of their employees went to my home gym. And I remember one of the guys that worked there, he saw me in the back and he just came, he's like, stop what you're doing. Like, your technique is so bad that you can pull on that handle all day long. You're not going to get better. And so, you know, taking the time to take that step backwards. And so I'm not pulling 100% effort intervals. I'm working on technique. I'm breaking the movement down into, you know, 5 different pieces and, you know, finding these little, breaking it apart and working on these single modality pieces with very, very low intensity and trying to perfect progress in everyone. I'm always striving for perfection, knowing that I'm never going to reach it, but working on each piece individually and then culminating it together. And so, you know, by the end of my career, I'm one of the shorter athletes, and obviously the rower is very, very beneficial to be taller. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, trying to be the best rower, you know, I'm fighting an uphill battle, but I never wanted to be good at rowing for my size. I wanted to be a good rower. And so, you know, if that means I need to put in extra effort to compensate for my build, well, yeah, then that's what I'm going to deal with. But seeing, you know, taking that step backwards early on in my career and then seeing it pay off, seeing the little bit of gain within the first month, and then going, oh, okay, let me double down on this. Let me do this with more movements. What other movements am I bad at? And then breaking that apart of like, okay, well, what's my limiting factor? Well, let me go work on that one bottleneck and then apply it forward.
I love that. And for those who haven't read the book, I highly recommend you pick it up, but it's broken down into like 5 major sections. So there's strength, endurance, speed, coordination, mentality, and recovery. And it kind of goes through everything. Like, what I love about it, it has interwoven stories mixed with all different things you can do with your training and your mindset. It's covering every angle effectively, which again, I think it's why people are getting so much benefit from it. But my personal thing that jumped out at me, as I said to you right before we went on air, the journal entries, I absolutely love those. I've gone and made notes and highlights, and there's something I'm going to go back on again and again. But one that really connected with me, and I'd like to explore it with you if you don't mind, is talk about bad motivators, the one you shouldn't have, the ones that you're ashamed to admit out loud. Now, as somebody who did CrossFit, who was a competitive bodybuilder and now does endurance events, 100-mile ultramarathons, triathlons, etc., I know exactly what you're talking about here. But for people listening, can you explain about bad, quote-unquote, bad motivators?
Yeah, you know, the one that jumps out of, you know, jumps like to the front of my mind is, you know, training off resentment. And, you know, I had some experience with this early on with my weightlifting career. Anyone that doesn't know, you know, my backstory, with my Olympic weightlifting, I actually broke my back in 2 spots. I broke my L5, you know, so that, you know, took me out of weightlifting for a while, 4 months in a full hard torso brace. And then after that, realized that the torso brace didn't fix anything. I had to receive surgery. And so they basically went in, rebroke my bone. So I have 6 bolts and two plates. So very, very invasive surgery and a long, long recovery process. But during that process, you know, I didn't have the life experience to know how to deal with a very hard situation like that. And I saw the effect it had on people, you know, people that I considered friends, you know, kind of take a step away from me. And then, you know, whether it was coaches or people that are determining who gets the spots at the Olympic Training Center, or who's picking athletes for a team. And I saw and heard it of like, oh, you know, his career's done. And so, you know, I took on a very resentful mentality of, I'm going to show you, I'm going to prove you wrong. I'm going to come back, not because I love it and that's what I want, but I'm going to do it to prove you wrong. You know, for short bursts, resentment is a phenomenal training tool. Nothing will light a fire under your ass like somebody telling you you can't, but it's a very, very hot burning fuel. And if you try to run off it too long, you'll burn out. And that's what happened. You know, for a full year after my surgery, I trained purely off resentment with a very, very strong fuck you mentality of like, you think I'm done? Fine. I'm going to prove you wrong. And in a little bit over a year, you know, I made a full comeback, made PRs, all that stuff. And then I just slowly found that I lost the love for the sport. You know, I wasn't excited about training. I was just angry. And, you know, it was just fears and insecurities coming out of like, what if everything those people were saying is true? What if I can't come back? What if my career is done? And, you know, it was a slow, slow transition from, you know, this is my dream. This is my passion. This is what my life revolves around, to me just losing the love for the sport. And so when it came to CrossFit, I made sure, you know, I now had that life experience. I now had that life lesson, and it was something that I could apply forward. And so I made sure to try to train off resentment as minimally as possible. And of course it comes up, you know, you hear, whether it's a competitor or announcer say something that you don't like, and, you know, like those bursts of resentment would come up, but then trying to use them, having a different mindset and using them as a silver lining, you know, finding the benefit in the people saying those things and hearing these false narratives coming up. And so, you know, I use it as, if somebody was saying like, oh, Matt doesn't compete well under pressure, well, I'm like, instead of saying like, you know, big F you, I'll show you it, I looked at it as good. Now, if I'm ever fighting from a lower rank, they aren't expecting me to do well. They think I'm going to crumble. So they're not going to perform at their top notch. They're going to rest on their laurels and not expect me to have a good performance, because now I'm in a spot of pressure. You know, anything like that, you know, it was one of those things. I remember hearing a story of the kid walking home from school every day and he's getting picked on for how dumb he is. And this bully nudges his friends, goes, hey, watch how dumb this kid is. And he holds out a dime and a nickel, says, hey, which one's worth more? And the kid takes the nickel and says he takes it because it's bigger, and all the kids are laughing at him, and he goes about his day. And this bully does it every single day. And finally the kid's dad grabs him and goes, hey, like, you know, the dime's worth more, take the dime. He goes, no, because if I take the dime, like, I'll stop getting a nickel every single day. And so, you know, through my career, instead of having a resentment on people commentating my events incorrectly, or people doing an incorrect analysis of how I move or why I move or why I approach the workout a certain way, I just step back and let them keep the narrative going. And, you know, I was like, okay, keep that going, because now you're not giving away my game plan to my competitors. You're downgrading me to all my competitors. So they're not going to, you know, take me as seriously or not be as scared of me. And that's where I want to be. Like, all I care about is my end performance. And, you know, the narrative that goes along with it, I'm not as concerned about.
That reframing, Matt, is that something that you've always been able to do naturally, or is that something you learned?
No, that came from enough hard life lessons. And you know, something kind of along that same page of, you know, bad things are going to happen. The path to your end goal is rarely ever going to be a smooth, straight line. You're going to have to overcome obstacles. And, you know, it came from enough life lessons and going through them without realizing that I was learning a life lesson. But something as simple as when I broke my back, you know, it was my dream to go to the Olympics. That's all I cared about. Both my parents were Olympians. I wanted to make it a family tradition that somebody in every generation goes to the Olympics. And so looking at it as, that dream never happened for me. Like, my sports career, the original dream, was a failure. Thank God it was a failure, because if I had gone to the Olympics in weightlifting, I would have felt satisfied, and I would have never pursued CrossFit, and I never would have had the opportunities that I have now. Something as simple as heartbreak. You know, I like getting dumped by a girl that I thought was the one. You know, you're in this hopeless scenario of like, I just got dumped. I'm never going to find someone else again. And I remember the last time I got dumped. Like, I was hopeless. I was heartbroken. Thank God that happened, because I never would have found Sammy. And so relating those scenarios, and in my CrossFit career, I had those situations where I remember feeling hopeless and not knowing, how am I going to get out of this situation? Because there's no end in sight. I don't have a path of steps I can take to get out of this situation. But I had enough of those life experiences prior that I knew there will be a silver lining to this. So I am a shell of myself. I'm still sad. I'm still hopeless, but knowing like, I wonder what the silver lining of this situation is going to be. And I wonder when I'm going to find it. And sure enough, you know, you give them enough time and you keep looking for that silver lining, you'll find it sooner or later. But yeah, like stuff like that, you know, you just have the trust and have the self-confidence to keep chugging forward, even if you don't know what the end is. Yeah, keep progressing towards it.
There's a silver lining in everything. I think that's what's so inspiring and motivational. The chapter 5 mentality, as somebody who's big on the mindset side and got so much from that personally, just because I'm able to apply it to my own life, particularly, you know, I think it's one of those that it doesn't matter of your level of fitness. If you're an absolute beginner, advanced athlete, you're going to get things all through the book, but particularly in chapter 5 and mentality, because in there you also talk about failure. So you give me a really nice segue that the best thing that ever happened to you was, you know, the losing at the CrossFit Games in 2015.
Yeah.
Explore your relationship with failure. You've touched on it there. And I think as somebody who follows you online, you know, has consumed your book and will reread it, talk about failure and the importance of seeing failure as feedback and nearly as a positive thing. I think you put a very positive reframe on it. Explore your relationship with failure, Matt.
Oh man. I can talk on this for an hour. You know, the rule that I started carrying forward was, if you fail at something the first time, why would you be good at it? You know, it's your first time doing it. You don't know what's involved. But if you fail at it again, and like basically if you didn't learn a lesson from that failure, if you didn't apply something from that bad experience forward, well, now it's on you. Now you're the one that's responsible for that failure. And, you know, it wasn't until recently, like within the last couple of years, that I realized the value of my 2015 failure. So 2014, I got second place at the CrossFit Games, and I was through the moon about it. And then 2015, same exact end result. I got second place again, but it was a whole different emotion after. I was so disappointed. It put me into a spiral. And for years, I always said, I fucking hate that medal. I hate looking at it. I hate that it's hanging on my wall. I hate that it's framed, because it represents to me cut corners, because I didn't take that year of training seriously. You know, my diet was trash. My sleep was inconsistent. My training wasn't good. And so I hated it, because that's what it represented to me, that like I cut corners through that whole season, and I got an end result that reflected the effort that I put in. Well, looking back now, I love that medal, because I know for a fact I would not have had the dominant career that I did without that. Because if I had been rewarded for my bad behavior, if I had won in 2015 with a bad sleep schedule, crappy diet, inconsistent training, a bad mindset, everything, well, I would have thought, oh, that's good enough. And that's the habits that I would have carried forward. But because of that detrimental feeling that I had after, and then questioning, you know, why do I feel this way? Why did I have the end results I have? It was that medal that forced me to sit down and do some real, real soul searching and figuring out, how much do I want to dedicate to this? What is the actual reason that, you know, I hate this medal? Because most people are psyched if they hit the podium. You know, they're one of the fittest people in the world. But I didn't look at it like that. And then, you know, I determined that, you know, it's not about the end result that I'm concerned about. It's the process on the way up. And it was because of that silver medal, I knew I was capable of more. I knew that wasn't a true reflection of what I could actually accomplish. And so I sat down, and this is as simple as sitting down with a pen and paper and going, why do I feel this way? And then just being a 2-year-old to yourself and why? And breaking it down into it's just most basic steps. And for me, I realized that 2015 medal, there was just so many what ifs attached to it. That competition literally came down to the final event. And I thought, you know, to win that year could have been the tiniest little difference throughout the season. What if I gave myself a bedtime? What if my diet was clean and consistent? What if I followed, you know, regimented training times throughout the day? stuff that simple. And so carrying on to the 2016 season, I just told myself, all right, for 1 year, I'm going to dedicate everything. I'm not going to do what's easy. I'm going to do what's right. And so I left no stone unturned. And I looked at every single decision during the day as a fork in the road of, is this going to take me closer to my goal or is this going to pull me away? And it didn't matter if it was a drastic fork in the road or if it was just these tiny little spreads. I did not leave a single opportunity for a what if to come into discussion. And, you know, did that for 1 year. And I was like, you know, if it doesn't pan out after a year, in the grand scheme of life, 1 year goes like that. And so I was like, even if it's a waste, I didn't waste much time. Did that for a full training year. And then I won the games by the largest margin of victory in history. And I went, oh, that's nice. Let me do that again. Let me try to find even more little things that I can improve on. And a lot of the stuff, it's nothing drastic. It's giving myself a bedtime. I'm an adult and I had a bedtime and a wake up time, whether it was training day or recovery day. Just having a consistent diet, having a happy home life. That was a huge contributor. And I just did it year after year after year. And out of the 5 years that I won the games, four of them, I set the largest margin of victory possible. So yeah, you know, just looking at those things of like, what can I do today? Even if it's tiny to progress me and put me towards the end goal that I'm striving for.
I love that. I follow your YouTube channel as well. And I was watching one of your videos where I think you were talking about one of the events where you marked what your hands would go for burpees. And you're like, this is where I know that, right, this is the position I need to be in. And you were talking about those marginal gains, those tiny things that add up.
So like that event specifically on the, so that was two events back to back. And I think there's a 1 minute rest in between. You know, I'm looking for every tiny spot that even I can either save time or I can save mental energy, and I can apply that mental energy to something physical. So I can like push down the throttle a little bit more, allow myself to have a clearer mind. And I remember before that event, I asked my judge, hey, like, so the event, it was overhead squats and then burpees to rings or burpee to target. And something as simple as, you know, myself, I know when I'm doing burpees to a target, I chalk the hell out of my hands. So there's handprints and I don't have to, I know, all right, if I do my burpee in this position, when I come up, I'm in the proper position to aim for the target. So I'm not having to look up as drastically and find that spot. But then something as tiny as asking my judge, do I have to touch the rings with the front of my hand? And he was like, nope. You can touch it with the back of your hand. That's fine. And so even looking at that movement of going up to your target, instead of having to pull your hands back further, come forward, touch, and then pull your hands back down for the burpee. Well, why not just go up, boom, touch with the back of your hand. Now I'm taking out having to aim for the target. I'm removing this minuscule amount of movement from my hand, but it freed me up to apply that effort to somewhere else. And is that why I won the event? Who knows? I don't even know if that played a factor in why I won that event. But you apply that, you have 100 of those different situations throughout the event. And maybe on this event, it takes you from second place to first place. Maybe on this event, it takes you from 15th place to 12th place. No one of those events, like that 6 points here, that 4 points there, maybe they don't even play a factor. But if you look at the leaderboard at the end of the games, there's a lot of people that they're separated by 1 point, 2 point, 5 points. And if you have three events out of 15 where it changed your placement by one or two spots, well, that accumulates up to a big, big point gap by the end of it. And so that's what I did through every single event, you know, like even events where there's a running course where, all right, you're starting from this spot and you just have to get to that cone up there. I'm looking at the landscape of, all right, do I take the path that's a little bit longer, but it's a nice smooth path, or do I trudge through the bushes just to get to that end point? And I'm weighing out the pros and cons of, all right, if I run through the bushes, I'm on event one of this whole competition. If I'm running through the bushes and I'm getting scraped up and I get a cut, well, now my body's going to be applying energy to heal that wound instead of going somewhere else. So, you know, looking at these tiny, minuscule places of, you know, conserving energy and looking at, all right, you know, final event of the games, I don't need to conserve energy anymore. Let's hit this workout with reckless abandon. And I'm not concerned about how it affects me tomorrow. Like the competition's done. And so I'm sure out of every 100 of those decisions, 99 of them played no factor, but I don't know which one actually is going to play a factor. So I'm just not taking a chance. I'm doing them all.
I love that. And I think for people listening, you can apply that to so many facets of your life. Like that transcends CrossFit. And you know, another one I loved from you was, if the chip timer was in your left foot, you weren't thinking about getting your body over the line. You're like, I just need to get my left foot over the line.
Yep. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure through my 7 years of the games, there were over 100 events that I've completed. And I'm sure diving my left foot over the line on 99 out of those 100 never affected my score. But then the one time that Samuel Quant and I are hauling ass down the turf and we're crossing the finish line at the exact same time. And you watch the video, he kicks his right foot forward and I kick my left. And so you never know when those little what ifs are going to play a factor, but the times that the opportunity for them to play a role do come in, that's when they count.
It's no secret to why you're the greatest of all time when you see how your mindset is and the way that you approach things. And something that I do want to touch on, it might seem like a bit of a sharp turn, but before I read the book, I would look at you as somebody who was ridiculously mentally tough, disciplined, resilient. And I still believe all of those things after reading, but you have a very interesting, similar to myself, and I think other either endurance athletes, CrossFitters, extreme athletes, bodybuilding, etc., have that different relationship with suffering. And there's a quote from the book, "To endure really means one thing to me, sacrificing a moment of pain for a lifetime of freedom." Can you explore what that means to you?
Oof. Yeah, I love it. I just got goosebumps when he said that. You know, through the later years of my career, I had a poster on my wall, and it was a Muhammad Ali quote, and it was, "Suffer now and live the rest of your life as a champion." And you know, that for me, that was most prominent when I was doing my rowing workouts. You know, you can hit the most gnarly rowing workout, and most of my workouts revolved around 5,000 meters. And there were, sometimes it was a 5,000 meters straight through. The extreme would be, I would do 50 by 100 meter sprints, but you know, somewhere in the middle. And if you're pushing the pace, that the rower will kick your ass, because you can always go faster. You can always pull harder. And you know, I would dread those workouts, because I know how hard I can push the pace. I know how much effort I can put into this, but then looking at the work objectively, and it's like, most of these workouts are 20 minutes start to finish. You know, like if you're rowing a 5K, like a, or, you know, 20 to 30 minutes, somewhere in there, depending on how much rest you have built in. And I was like, this is the number one tool that I use to get my fitness up. And it's a 30 minute time commitment every other day. That's fucking nothing. And then also having the self-confidence, the reassurance that it does not matter how hard I push myself in this workout, whether it's cardio, whatever it is, 5 minutes after the workout's done, my heart rate's going to be back down. I'm going to have my breath back. I'm going to have a cup of water in my hand. I'm going to be, you know, fist bumping my friends, my training partners, and I'm going to feel normal. So it was like, push the pace now. Don't go for that instant gratification of putting the barbell down or slowing down your pace to get that little bit of sense of relief, because after the workout's done, that little sense of relief is going to turn into regret. Mm-hmm. And then that, I'm not going to be proud of those results, or I can hang on, go unbroken, push the pace, find a new failure point, but I'm going to have that sense of pride forever. And so, you know, for me, it's like any records I have, it's a coin flip every single year if somebody's going to beat that record or not. There's only two options. Either somebody's going to break the record or somebody's not. It's only a matter of time before somebody breaks all my records. But nobody can take away those gold medals. I have those forever. I am proud of those results forever, because I put in the full effort. So yeah, it was just a matter of, you know, putting in the work now. And you look at my career, like, especially my wins, it was 5 years. In the grand scheme of life, you look at where you were 5 years ago, a lot of times it seems like yesterday. So I knew it was such a short window and I can only strike once. It's not like I can go back when I'm 50 and take another whack at, you know, competing as an individual. So I was like, all right, I have this opportunity one time and I'm going to take full advantage of it. And so luckily, you know, it paid off. I'm happy with the results. I'm very proud of what I did in my career. And so now it's just taking that same mentality and applying it forward to everything else that I'm pursuing.
And that gives me a great jumping off point to the last thing that I want to touch on. And towards the end of the book, you talk about your big why, you know, and we talk about the workouts, but one that I loved was, you know, talking about completing a grueling workout and looking for something as primal as face planting into the snowbank after a grueling assault bike session, you know, find something that you can do after. But what's your big why now? Is that something you still apply now that you've moved on to the next chapter of your life? Do you still work towards a big why?
Oh, absolutely. There's very little I do in the day without a very specific intent. You know, any task that I take on, I look at, all right, what is my ideal goal? Like if I'm taking this on, everything goes perfectly, what do I want the end result to be? And then weighing like, okay, is that something that's going to be worth the effort going through? You know, I'm trying to think of the quote that I heard one time. Working towards something you don't care about is stress. Working towards something that you care about is called passion. And so, you know, like a lot of times, you know, working on something and you're getting stressed about it, well, it's probably not the right thing. You know, now, like through my CrossFit career, through, you know, working with HWPO training, working with Podium Nutritions, writing my book, none of it's ever been stressful because I care about it. And so it's like, I'm expecting obstacles to come up and I know I'm going to overcome them. It's just a matter of how long it's going to take, how much I need to dedicate towards it, what resources do I need to, you know, overcome it? Who do I need by my side? So yeah, every project I take on is because I'm passionate about it. So when it requires early mornings or late nights, I'm not cursing about it. I'm not upset about it. I'm like, no, I'm working towards something I want. So I'm pumped to see the end result. So if it needs more hours, or if it needs more time, or if it needs more resources, I'm happy to give it.
And final question, Matt, and I can't thank you enough for your time. Like, you inspire the fuck out of me from afar with your content and the way that you are, the way that you speak, the passion that you show, and all the tools that you've given me for my mindset. So an acknowledgement and a thank you from me. But the last question, talk to us about the launch of the app and the future of HWPO.
Yeah. So we launched our own app. So it's available for Apple and Android. HWPO training. We have 5 different tracks on there currently. So, you know, any fitness level, any fitness goal, we have you covered. You can go to hwpotraining.com, sign up. And then, you know, we carried over the three tracks we have. HWPO flagship. So for anyone that's, you know, still trying to get after it in the gym, hit PRs, maybe you're doing the occasional competition. HWPO 60, it was built with the intent of people that still want, you know, to work towards PRs or lifting heavier weights, but you have time constraints. So probably you have other responsibilities outside the gym, whether it's family, work life, whatever it is. So it's the flagship program tailored down all on time intervals. So you're held accountable through the training session. We offer HWPO Pro. So it follows the CrossFit season live. So as soon as a workout's announced for the open, we're in there modifying training to set you up for the best success. Then with the app, we launched HWPO Sweat. So that's, you know, no barbells, no high skill gymnastics, very lightweight, but it's just a burner every single day. You're in and out of the gym in 45 minutes. You know, I love that workout. It is, you want to get your heart rate up and just get a good sweat, set you up for the day. There's that. And then we also launched HWPO Classic, which is just a daily classic CrossFit workout of couplets, triplets, chippers. So if you're following one of the other tracks, you get HWPO Classic for free included. And so, you know, if you're going through your progressions in whatever track you're on and you have some buddies that are joining you for the day and you want just a good workout to throw down, compete against each other with, we got you covered there.
I love it. And for everybody listening, I will link the app in the show notes on BrianKeenFitness.com and in the link in the description where you're listening to today's podcast. Go and check it out. And I highly recommend go check out HWPO, the book. Unbelievable. As I said, I have it all marked up from the journal entries. Matt, I cannot thank you enough for your time. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep inspiring. And thanks for all you do.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, man.
There you have it, 5-time fittest man on earth, Matthew Fraser, on using the fuck you mentality, why suffering makes you stronger, and how hard work pays off. This is definitely going to be one of those podcasts that I go back on and listen to several times again, similar to his book. Those journal entries are so thought-provoking, and I've marked up the copy that I have of the book, and I'll be going back to it time and time again, and the mindset section in there is just something that I know it's going to add so many different tools to my own personal arsenal. So to get to talk to Matt on this podcast was an absolute pleasure. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. As always, if you did, take a screenshot, pop it up on your Instagram. You can tag me, Brian_Keen_Fitness, and you can tag Matt Fraser, or the HWPO page on Instagram. That is everything from this week's episode. Thanks for listening. Catch you all next Monday.